Today on Rockin' the Suburbs,
it's a milestone episode.
Episode of what, Jim?
Of our podcast. It's the 500th episode.
Wait, you mean these microphones have been recording me the whole time? I have to be somewhere.
Okay, Patrick, we're here in the basement.
Yes, we are.
And this is your basement. This is where the show started.
That's right.
This is where it all started.
Yeah,
the first time we recorded was right here. You put together this makeshift table that we're still sitting at, and now it's decorated some
stickers.
Nice stickers now, but it wasn't at the time.
Nope.
You built this table in your workshop,
that's
as I recall.
Right. Yeah.
And this is where we started recording.
And then
sometimes we would do it at my house, and basement, or on the back deck, or we go to Mike Snyder's house, or we go backstage at shows, or wherever. We've been all over the place.
Yeah, we have the pool house. Greg Wilson invited us over.
The tiki house.
Yeah,
it was great. We'll go wherever.
And, yeah, we'll go anywhere.
We've recorded shows. I've recorded stuff in Detroit and Louisville, and you recorded in Nashville.
Yeah,
all over the place.
I know, it's been amazing.
So, all a long way of saying that this is episode number 500.
Wow. How did that happen?
Kind of amazing.
Yeah, it really is.
And to mark episode 500, we decided to invite some listeners to come on. We set up a little thing online, a little chat room kind of deal.
Google Hangout thing.
And you should be able to hear their voices, and they're just going to ask us questions.
That's
we didn't
gonna
have
be good.
To prepare anything.
We That's just right.
Right?
Yeah, I love that. And I also want to say that we rejected my good friend and bandmate Andy's idea to do a 500 based on the Indy 500 or the Daytona 500 music. So I think that was a good decision.
He wanted songs based on auto racing? Was that his idea?
That's right. That were only 500-mile races, though.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Do you know any of those songs?
No. It would have taken some work. Yeah. There must be songs about the Indy 500.
Well, I know the song they always sing is Back Home in Indiana.
There you go.
And by the way, Jim Nabors has a lovely singing voice. He always does that at the
Indy
500.
Does he?
Yes.
That's cool.
Yes. This really rich, operatic sort of voice. Now, it's very different from his golly.
Right. Back home again in Indiana, and it seems that I can see the gleaming candlelight still burning bright through the sycamores for me.
Where was I going with this?
So,
other listeners suggested that we do a 500 greatest songs of all time countdown.
Oh, yeah.
Ending with Stairway to Heaven.
Of course.
Number one, right? But we decided not to do that. So instead, we're just going to do this. We're going to have people ask us questions. So they call this an Ask Me Anything on Reddit, but this isn't on Reddit, so we might get sued. So we're going to do something else. Okay.
Bring it on.
It's Rockin' the Suburbs. If you made it this far, you've probably listened before. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
We talk about music, and we're just going to open this up now to questions from people. So does anyone have a question for us?
Hey, guys. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hey, bud.
Hey, bud.
Good,
hey.
Man.
Bud Verge, ladies and gentlemen.
Hey, congrats on 500.
Thank you, man.
My question would probably be, what shows are you the proudest of? Like, what ones were the best ones, your favorite ones, the ones you're most proud of doing over the last 500?
Great question.
All right. You want to go?
Sure.
Because I'm curious, too.
Yeah. I felt proud of a lot of the stuff we did. I think we've come a long way in some of our thinking. But I think some of the ones I'm most proudest of are the ones that we sort of ran on instinct. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about, though. The ones that we sort of did kind of on instinct, Jim, and then suddenly they became like really popular, like, we did a thing on The Clash. Let's just do that and see how that goes. Or, we did 5 Talking Heads albums. Or, we had Mark Jenkins over and did The Velvet Underground. Like, those have gone better.
So you like the album ones, it seems like.
Yeah, those have actually gone better because we sort of I don't know about you, but we sort of think like, hey, let's just do this on instinct. We need five shows, and we kind of do it. Yet they come out to really appeal to the sensibilities of our listeners and the people they like, you know, it totally appeals to them. So I like those where we kind of wing it and people like really respond.
Okay. That's cool.
You know what I mean?
So I have a couple of, I have a couple of picks, but before I get to that, I want to mention something. You mentioned the first time we did five albums from a band, the big five, as the we later five, called it,
right.
Was The Clash.
Yep.
And it was because of, I guess, the anniversary of their debut album. And I remember that I came up with that idea. I said, why don't we do their first five albums, one each day, and we'll talk about it in some depth.
It was amazing.
Well, it was, but I remember cursing myself for having that suggestion as I was doing all this research into these five albums to sit down and talk about them, because it's one thing to research like one album to talk about, but five of them,
you know, because
you can't, believe it or not, peoples, we actually do have to do some research. Even when you love an artist like that and think you really know it, you want to make sure you don't misstate things
or are misremembering things.
Yeah,
so you have to
go in and write down a bunch of facts and get all this stuff straight.
Right.
And then, and I remember thinking like, this is way more work than I signed up for, but we liked it enough that we did it again. Like you mentioned with Talking Heads and, Elvis Costello.
Right.
And others.
Yeah.
I can't remember now. Yeah.
And we did the Velvet Underground like track by track the first album, which is really cool.
That was
too.
Fun.
Yep.
I would say, it's fun. As you're talking, I think, well, I mean, I was really happy that we got the Tim Kaine interview. I just thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah, that was
just unique. Like, who interviews a senator about music, and especially a senator who actually knows music. I thought that was great. But probably the proudest thing I think we have done. So remember this, because think of all the moving parts that this thing had. Remember when we did the Tom Petty tribute after
that was big.
He died? Maybe like it was days or a week or so after he died.
Yeah.
We did it out here on your back deck or your backyard. And Phil Ingrassia came over.
Yeah, Phil was here.
And we so wanted to like do this right that we had not only Phil contributing, but also we had recorded our friend Mike Snyder making a little tribute because he couldn't come out. You had recorded
David Malice from the Washington Post.
Yes.
Yeah.
Making a little tribute. And then I had recorded also an interview with Chuck Prophet.
That's right.
About it.
Yeah.
About Tom Petty. And then on the spot, we set this up in advance, but we also managed to get Matthew Sweet
just
on the
call
phone
him up
to talk about Tom
that was
Petty.
Cool. Yeah.
So, there was a lot going on in that whole week. And then on top of that, we interviewed, we also had Craig Rosen from Los Angeles on the phone to talk about
Petty. And he introduced us. I know.
But this guy who was Petty's record promoter, and we recorded that. And at the time it was, we actually had too much stuff.
Yeah.
So we held on to that, and then we used that a little bit later on. So that, I think, that was a really good night.
Oh, that was amazing. It was actually so late. I know we joked about this, but my wife basically did not allow us back in the house. So I said to these guys, you guys just got to pee on the lawn, man. she's going to kill us if we walk back
in the house.
We'd been out there for a long time.
We were out there a long time, but it was really fun. Yeah. It was a good time. And then we should probably mention the Tommy Keene interview,
I was going to say, remiss not to mention that. It was nothing that we had set up or planned. We just wanted to talk to him because we were both fans, and I grew up seeing him a lot, and it just turned out to be a situation where, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I remember we interviewed Tommy Keene. I want to say it was shortly after that Matthew Sweet interview, which was in October of last year of 2017. Mm-hmm. And then we were kind of sitting on that interview. We had recorded it, but he wasn't like touring or promoting anything.
No.
So we felt like no pressure to figure out
the best place
to put it out there. And you had wanted to write an article, sort of go with it. And we wanted to really spend some time editing it. So we were just kind of sitting on it, like, we're going to get to this in a little while. And then,
because he'll come back around or whatever.
Right. Yeah. And then I'm at Thanksgiving, literally like a half hour before we're about to sit down to dinner at my in-laws in Florida. And I'm getting news on my phone that Tommy Keene had died.
Yeah.
And I was like, this can't be right. And I'm confirming it. And then, so that turns out it was true. And then that just put a whole damper on that evening for me.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously. And then
me too.
we very quickly rushed that interview together, edited it all, and got it out there. And then here's the weird thing, I think. You sort of have mixed feelings. It's like you want to promote this, and we pretty much confirmed that must have been, we were pretty satisfied that was the last interview he had done. And so you kind of want to promote that, but at the same time, you don't want to be sort of ghoulish about it either.
No, not at all.
You know, yeah. or have people or feel like you're trying to capitalize on that or whatever. But at the same time, you also feel like to his fans, they probably want to hear the last time he sat down to talk to somebody. Mm-hmm. So you really have to be sensitive as to how you promote that. And I think we tried, you know, to
I think
do that.
So too. And it was really interesting, the reaction to a lot of people that were close to him or knew him, and how that interview gave some closure to certain things. And, you know, they were nice to get in touch with us and let us know that. And
some of his closest friends and family and, you know, business associates, stuff like that, you know, a few people got in touch with us about how much they appreciated that interview. So
it was very unvarnished. Yeah. We just let it go. You know, it wasn't like we did anything. We just let the tape run. So,
so that was a long answer.
Yeah, that was.
Sorry, guys. We're bringing you down. Anybody else have
Speaking
any questions?
Speaking of peeing on the lawn, I'll be right back.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, man.
Curious, has it gotten easier to interview these people like Matthew Sweet, Chuck Prophet, you know, all that, just as nerve-wracking as it used to be?
And that's Justin Steiner.
Yeah. Valparaiso, Indiana.
Yeah, that's right.
That's right.
By the way, Hoosiers looked really good, I thought, against Louisville the other day. So,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So it's funny. I've been a journalist for a long time, so I don't really get nervous doing interviews. That's probably when I do my most prep, because that's when you really want to be in there and you want to like know enough to be able to ask, you know, smart questions and not make the subject feel comfortable that you have done that homework and that you know what you're talking about. So I do a lot of prep on interviews, and I wouldn't say I really get nervous. I'm going to take that back a little bit. I always feel a little bit nervous until the moment it starts, and then I feel fine. Then I totally feel fine. Mm-hmm. And I've been through it. I've done it enough times to know that's always going to be the case. I will say it's much more fun interviewing somebody with a co-interviewer.
Yeah.
I find that to be the case.
Totally agree.
The times when I do it on my own, and we've had a few episodes where that's been the case, especially when I went to Louisville and did a bunch of interviews at the festival there.
Amazing.
I thought that came out well.
Yeah.
But I feel much more at ease knowing that I only have to ask like half the questions, or, you know, you may know a little bit more about this person in this case than I do, or vice versa. Right. You know, it feels like a lot of the pressure off.
Totally does. And if you start to stumble or wander around for your next question, you just look at your co-interviewer and say, help me out here, buddy. You know, and that always works.
Yeah.
And, you know, interestingly enough, when I was interviewing Joe Gross about the Fugazi 33 and a third book he wrote, he was talking about something where he was sitting down at a table with all four members of Fugazi, and he got this sense of like, oh my God, I'm interviewing Fugazi. And he started to float away from the situation.
Right.
That's what happens to me a lot of the time. It's like, oh my God, I'm sitting here with Matthew Sweet. And then I just start to float away, and I'm like up on the ceiling watching me do it. And then I'm no longer, you know, paying attention or present. And that's what I have to fight
against. It is weird. Yeah. That probably was the one that felt the most surreal, just because I think because of the age I am and sort of like how big, at least in my mind, Matthew Sweet was for a period of my life, that it was, you did have the moments where you sort of like stop and be like, wait, is this really happening?
Yeah,
really? Just sort of sitting back here talking with this guy who,
I know. It's cool.
That was weird. We also don't coordinate the questions that we're going to ask. So
never.
I come up with questions, I'll write questions out, and you write stuff out or have notes. We both come with like notes.
Right.
We both come prepared to do an interview, but we don't know what the other person's going to ask.
No.
We never are like, I'm going to start with this, and then you're going to do that, and whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just sort of flows, don't you think?
Yeah,
it just sort
totally
of works
agree.
Out that way.
Yeah.
We try to make it a conversation more than an interview as much as we can.
Yeah.
And we've been fortunate that most of the people we've had on the show have not been difficult interviews. It's where, you know,
right.
And you can hear that when it happens, but that hasn't happened so much.
Yeah. Yeah. It really hasn't. And I don't get nervous anymore. I think at some point, I don't know when it was, but I'm happy this happened. I just accepted that I'm a completely ridiculous person, and I've just sort of lived with that. So no matter what I do, I can't be more ridiculous. So I just let the questions flow.
So I will tell this story. Story has not been told. That the only time on this show where I got really, really nervous and it almost doomed us.
Oh, no.
Was the Tim Kaine interview.
Oh, that's right.
So I'm not really nervous at all interviewing musicians, just because
that was a, yeah, I don't know. That was different, though.
At this point, I guess I've hung around with enough of them that they don't seem sort of that big of a deal to me. I mean, if we were interviewing...
They're everyday people.
If we were interviewing... Well, you know, I'll take that back. I was about to say if we were interviewing, like, you know, Jagger and Richards, maybe it'd be different. But I will tell you that in my day job, I interviewed Roger Daltrey not too long ago.
That was amazing. Yeah.
Not for the podcast, but for my day job. And I wasn't nervous at all for that. And so, I don't know. I'm just used to it. But Tim Kaine, a senator, I've never really covered in journalism career, I've never covered really anything like that. So those people, that's like a foreign world to me.
Yeah.
And that just seemed huge. Even though he was
different.
The nicest, friendliest guy and totally cool. So we sit down. I'm so nervous.
Yeah.
And we're in his office. I got all the equipment set up and everything. And
plus you had to deal with that, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And we knew we only had a short amount of time. So that also, you know, ramps up the pressure.
Yeah.
And we sit down. He comes in and he introduces himself and he makes some little joke about, oh, this is going to be the hardest interview I have all day. Ha ha ha. And he sits down and, you know, we did like really quick, like sound check and everything. And you can, and we just go. We launch into the interview. And fortunately, I thought about this, but about 3 minutes into him talking, I was like, I don't think I ever pressed record.
That's right.
Only time I've ever done that in the whole 500 episodes
Pretty amazing.
So fortunately, I just reached over and hit it. And it was soon enough in the interview that we didn't miss anything super important or that we couldn't explain in our little setup to the show and all of that. But but I was thinking, God, if I hadn't thought of that, we would have gone the whole time and I would have gotten none of it.
That would have been, that would have been bad. Yeah, that was totally different, but, you know, unique.
It was fun.
Yeah.
That was really, really fun.
Cool. Yeah, he was cool. He was way more experienced about interviewing than we were. Just put it that way.
All right.
That was cool.
Anyone else?
All right. Hey, it's Keith Jacobson again. I got a question that builds off maybe Justin's question. So, who is your guys's, each of your white whale interview subject that you'd like to get on the podcast?
Well, I can take that off the bat.
I'm going to answer for Patrick first.
Go ahead.
Nico Case.
Yes, that's correct.
I knew it.
You can feel that coming through my brain.
I knew that's
number one. Yeah. Nico
now, have
Case.
You ever put in, she's come through town several times.
Yeah, twice.
You put in an interview request?
Twice, nothing.
Doesn't happen?
Yeah. I think I have like a 4,000-mile perimeter around Nico. It would be the best, though. I would love to have
that. So if we could book anyone, any musician, let's just say, start with that. Well, no, I'm going to, okay. So I would say, if we could have anyone at all, I probably... So we did have Tommy Stinson.
We did. That was cool.
And that was really cool.
While you're pondering that, I'm going to get us two more beers.
All right. I was going to say, if we could get Paul Westerberg, I think that would be a fantastic...
Yes.
That would be a fantastic interview. And when I was in college, I interviewed him for the school paper, a face-to-face interview backstage in 87, Pleased to Meet Me tour. Sounds right. And he was a fantastic interview then. Like, I don't know what he'd be like today. Probably a little more difficult, but if he would do it, I think that would be great. And then the other one we've honestly actually thought about putting a request in for, you know, just on the fraction of 1% chance that he would do it. Is Barack Obama, because he's actually a music guy. You know, he's a big music fan, too. And we were thinking, like, well, he lives in D.C. Maybe we could make that happen. So that, you know, if we could, if we can get Barack or Michelle, she's a big Stevie Wonder fan. If we can get either of them on the show, that would be something. Patrick is off to get more beers. Who else is on?
Were there any bands that you missed or dismissed the first time around that you've now come to enjoy?
So we've actually talked about this once on the show before. So he asked if there's any bands that we just as fans that we dismissed at one point, but we've come around on.
Oh, interesting.
Over time.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you I'll tell you a couple.
Okay.
One we talked, we actually had this conversation once. We did an episode on like, we used to hate them, now we love them or whatever. And mine was Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah.
I never, when Fleetwood Mac was popular all those years, I never really got into them. Mm-hmm. I think it was because I was younger at that time. And to me, they seemed kind of soft rock at the time. And it wasn't really my thing. But now I totally love that band. Like, I so love that band. I appreciate the songwriting and just the, you know, the way they sort of craft a sound that feels really very timeless in a way.
Yeah.
Like, it feels, I've come to appreciate them so much that I almost feel like they, in some ways, they have almost like this effortlessness to what they do that's just really kind of amazing in the way they can sort of blend all the different pieces together. It's great. So Fleetwood Mac would be one. The other one of recent vintage for me, not a recent vintage band, mm-hmm. but this is a recent appreciation. It's partly based on the movie, but also just my sort of getting over myself is Queen.
Oh, okay.
I mean, because I never, you know, I don't, if you consider them maybe sort of a proggy kind of band, I don't really like that kind of music, and they're sort of, and they sort of seem so, they kind of always seem to me kind of so self-indulgent and sort of like that big operatic thing and trying to make music that was something other than just like great pop music. But, and I wouldn't call myself a huge fan, but they've probably got, I mean, I could put together a really good greatest hits, like mixtape of Queen, and I would love it. You know what I mean? Like they have enough mm-hmm. like really good songs that really get it. And the other thing too is I started to realize, and where I was saying sort of get over myself, was I started to realize like the bigness of the band, the sort of over the top nature of the band is Queen. Like, you have to accept that. Once you accept that, then it's like, oh, this is pretty great. And there should be some bands like that.
Yeah.
Not every band should be like the Circle Jerks, right?
No.
You know? In fact, hardly any band should probably be like the Circle
That's
Jerks
right.
other than the Circle Jerks. But what I'm saying is you know, there should be some bands that just go all out and just are like, you know, trying to just be bigger than everything else. And once you, for you, that's probably Kiss, right? Like, they always were sort of like that too, right?
Exactly. So, it was, you know, the theatrics was part of it too. Yeah. Right.
So once you sort of accept that, it's like, this is pretty great.
Yeah.
So,
you know, it's interesting. I can also say there's a lot of bands that I hyped or really embraced, like on their first album, that I really wish I hadn't. You know, it's like,
there's a lot of those.
God, Jesus, those guys are terrible. But you know what? The funny one for me is ABBA. So
okay,
I always dismiss them as like, I'm not touching that kind of total pop fluff radio stuff that's so silky and energetic and, you know, gleaming.
Right.
And then eventually I just gave in one day. It was like, this is the best song of all time. The sun's out. I'm listening to this. I feel completely happy. Why are you being such an asshole? You know, just accept how great this music is, even though it was manufactured and put together, you know, rivets and all. It was so good.
I completely agree with you. I think that's another good example. In my, you know, in my younger days, I would have never admitted to liking ABBA. But
I went out on a limb.
But do you think that part of that, too, is not only that maybe you, do you think there's a part of maturation that allows you to revisit these things and hear it with fresh ears too?
Sure.
Right? Because you
there's part of that.
There's a part when you get to a certain age where you're sort of like, I don't care if people.
No.
You know,
right.
I don't care if people make fun of me if I like this. Whereas when you're younger, maybe you care more about stuff like that, right?
I think that's part of it too. Yeah. And of course, you know, and we talked about this pretty recently. You know, sometimes you have an emotional connection to a certain record, might be like Daydream Nation. And that's different than actually not accepting it. You know what I mean? You know, if you're going through a rough time in your life and that record was popular then it becomes somehow like you don't want to touch it. But, you know, that doesn't mean like you're not, you know, you miss the band or, you know, you hated them at first or anything like that.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. Good question.
Yeah, that was a really good question. And who asked that question? I was in the bathroom.
That was Keith.
Keith.
No, that was Bill and Foster.
Oh, no, it was Bill. I'm sorry.
So, Bill, is there a band for you that's in that situation that made you ask that question?
No, I'm probably more inflexible than I should be. My first opinions get fixed. Although I hadn't even thought about it. You mentioned ABBA. ABBA is an excellent – that I would – now that I think about it, I would agree.
Yeah.
When I was a teenager, you know, I wouldn't have been caught dead in the same room with them.
Right.
And now I'm a dancing queen, so
Now, have you ever had a situation where you admitted, this probably would have been you were young, when, you know, you're younger, where you admitted to liking a band or you said you liked a band and people like mocked you for it?
Oh, gosh.
I'll give you an example.
Okay.
For mine. For me, it was New Order.
Oh, really?
Yes.
People made fun of you for liking New Order?
Yes.
Huh.
I guess weird. Because they were sort of like synth pop and all, you know, in some way, right? And there was no guitars
or very
little that you could hear. And people were like, New Order? You like New Order?
Yeah.
So I had to hide the New Order
fandom
for a long time. And now looking back at it, I'm like, that's insane. New Order's great.
Right.
Who doesn't love New Order?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think that comes, you know, like you were saying, some of that maturation. It's interesting, you know, from my perspective, it probably won't surprise anyone from being like the record clerk guy. I was always the guy that was probably mocking people for liking some bands. What, you've never heard of, like, the English Beat? It's 1982. Come on, man. You know, or the Beat. You know, I was always probably on the other side of that. And so sorry, Jim, if I made fun of you for liking New Order.
I don't think you would have, right?
No, never.
But if I were buying maybe like that Eddie Money album, would you have made fun of me for that?
Occasionally, I would do things like that, yeah.
I like that song, Shaken. I think that's a good song.
Are you sure this is the record you meant to buy?
Well, that's what I was going to ask. Is it? I've never worked at a record store. I don't know if any of the other folks here have, but is it true? Do record store clerks, are our fears actually true that record store clerks evaluate what we purchase?
Oh, all the time. Yeah, absolutely.
And judge us, right?
Absolutely, okay. Yeah.
100%.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. I knew it.
Yeah. Why would you work at a record store? It's not like you're getting paid a lot.
Can I also point out one of the most dangerous things of working at a record store was being able to see what came in used first and getting first pick on that.
That's
there goes
right.
my paycheck.
Yeah, goodbye. Exactly right. Yeah.
That's cool.
It's all about free records and judging people.
There it is. Yeah, let's put that on the back of the Rock in the Suburbs t-shirt.
Yeah, that's right.
And then call on the record store or the record company people and trying to get free tickets.
That's right. I've been working your record all week.
All right. Anybody else?
I just want to say thank you for 499 great shows.
And then this one.
And then this one, then 500 more great shows after that.
Thank you, man.
I don't think you guys realize the importance of what you do and the community that you've built and all the, you know, extra friends I have now that I didn't have 2 years ago or 3 years ago. And it's really all because of you guys. So thanks, Jim and Patrick. I mean, the last 2 years have been fantastic.
Cool. Thank
That's
you,
That's really nice, bud. You know, this whole community thing is so interesting.
That's my favorite thing.
Right? It's so amazing. Like Mike Wagner and Nick Scalera getting together. That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, Bud was kind of on the same track I was. You know, you started the old podcast, you know, and this one too, to get an audience. And I was just going to, you know, see what you thought and about. We're talking to each other on Twitter without you guys involved and all that. It's really cool to have, you know, made those connections and everything. So, you know, I appreciate it too, as somebody who's been in the RTS fan club on Facebook since the beginning. It's been really fun to kind of watch it grow and to be part of it. So thanks for that, I guess.
It means a lot.
It does.
Yeah, it really does.
And I learn a lot from the listeners too, as I mentioned. I mean, music is so big that there's always more to learn. And that's what's the amazing thing about it. I think I've thought about this, and I think like there's a lot of times when I'm just around normal people. and I feel like the weirdo.
Yeah.
What's happening right now?
What's happening is that Weezer put out two perfect albums, Blue and Pinkerton, and the rest was pretty corny.
Well, that's your opinion, but me, I'm ride or die.
For Weezer?
They've been trying since 2001, son.
Well, if you think that, you're not going to like what I'm about to say.
Well, then, please don't say it.
Pork and Beans is better than Buddy Holly.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're dumb. Oh, you're dumb.
Is this a thing people care about?
And I feel like it's hard for me often to talk to the normal people. So I like hanging around like these people, the community people.
Me too.
Because we can have conversations.
These are our people.
But even then, I'm amazed by sometimes the things I don't know. You know what I mean? Because the thing about music is you can try to learn all this stuff, but it's too big. You can't know it all.
No, you can't.
And there's always going to be everybody in this group is going to have their own little things that they know a lot more about than you do. And so that's why the community is a wonderful thing, because everybody brings something else to it and helps, like you say, always like fill in those gaps and things like that.
Yeah. You know, and I feel like our listeners are really great about sharing those moments that were so impactful for them about music. You know, where it intersected with an emotional moment in their lives, or, you know, just something that changed them. And I really value that. You know, when they share that, it's kind of cool.
And I'm going to tell you guys something here, too. This is something I've learned from many years of living.
Right.
This is the litmus test, how you can tell a normal person
from
the freaks like us, right? Here's the thing. If you have a group of people around and you say, like, I want to play, oh man, you guys have to hear this song. I want to play this song for you. You guys have to hear this song. And you put it on. The people who start talking, get them out.
Right.
Get them out.
When the song's playing.
But the people who listen, the people who listen to the song playing, those are your people, right?
Amen, brother.
So this is for Patrick, I think.
Okay.
That's your collection you have there. What's your most valuable piece that you have in your collection?
Wow. You mean to me personally, or
to you personally? Not on this.
Oh, okay.
Job.
Yeah, it's not that one.
Not Lou Rawls.
When you've heard Lou, you've heard it all. I can actually sell you that for like $5. Really good question. Most of my records mean a lot to me, but. You know, I was thinking about this the other day. The first time I got a paycheck of my own, not money I'd borrowed from my parents or my brothers or anybody that sent me money, I actually bought, weirdly enough, Bob Dylan's Blonde on Blonde. And I'm not sure why I bought it. And I wasn't really that crazy about it, but that's probably the record. I think if I gave away all the records that I have around here, the one that I would hold on to probably the most. And I just love the stories about Nashville, and I've always liked country music a lot. Like the first song I ever heard was Ring of Fire, that like woke me up. And
yeah,
so that's probably the record of all these, Jim, that I would hold on to.
Is what?
Blonde on Blonde, like Mr. Patty, floating on the sea as global warming takes us over. I'd be holding on to Blonde on Blonde. Although I have to say, I've got some pretty valuable records.
Well, that's
here.
What I was going
to
say. So the one you mentioned has sentimental value.
Yeah, totally.
But is there something in your collection that has the greatest monetary value?
As far as I know, I have a copy of Guided by Voices Propeller, one of the only 500 that have ever been made, hand decorated by the band. I don't know. I guess they go for up to 2,000 or something.
Wow. All right. Better keep that safe spot.
It's not filed I'm under
looking.
G.
Where is it? Okay. All right.
So, but, I think it's more about just coming down here and communicating with the records. Me and Jim were listening to Magazine earlier. It was nice.
Yeah. Okay, I think Mackenzie's back on.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. I listen to you guys every morning when I'm walking to work or to class. And so it's like a really nice day to start, nice way to start the day. And I like that a lot of times when I talk about music, it's like I'm talking into the abyss and it's kind of like reminding me that I'm not alone out there.
That's nice.
That's so cool. Yeah. Mackenzie's smarter than us, just like my whole theory is. Our no, but that's nice. Smarter than us.
Well, it's funny to hear because I felt like when I was in college, like we could have music conversations like all the time, yeah. Like day and night, like that totally. Just wasn't an issue. So right. It's interesting you say that because I feel that as I've gotten older, it's become harder and harder.
Yeah,
which I think is why we started doing this because
right. I agree.
I just don't run into very many people who just care that much anymore, you know. Or if they do, it's only about stuff that they liked 20 years ago.
Yeah,
and you know, so
yeah. And I think it's interesting, Mackenzie, that. I think when Jim and I get together to do this and like hopefully what we put out there, like time slows down a little bit. It's not as hectic, you know, it's like, hey, let's take a breath and like actually be into this for 20 minutes.
Right.
So, it's cool that, not only Jim and I sort of communicate on that same wavelength, but there's a lot of people that feel it when we do so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you for everyone who joined us, and thanks for listening, and thanks for everyone who didn't join us and listens to the show.
Yeah, I know.
We're so appreciative. We do love the community. That's really...
It means a lot.
It does mean a lot. Mm-hmm. It definitely keeps us going, and we've met so many cool people, either virtually like this or in phone conversations, or people we met IRL, right?
That's right.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Think of a guy like Jesse Jackson that we met, mm-hmm. you know, early on. It's been a supporter. He's a cool dude.
Absolutely. So, all right. Well, we'll keep it going.
Yeah. I mean, this is only 500, right?
Yeah. What else do we have to do?
As Bud said, I wish you 500 more. So I hope that's cool.
All right. We'll keep it going.
And now we're going to do the drawing. And so the winner, there was a raffle. Right. Yep.
Oh, there was?
Everyone on the list. And the winner gets a copy of, here it is, Jim. Right here. Lightning Strikes by Lou Christie.
What is that?
I don't know.
Speaking of an artist I've never heard of.
Lou Christie, Lightning Strikes.
All right, let's wrap this up.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
All right, thanks a lot, everybody who's on. Let's also promote the fact that if you want to interact with our show another way, a very rewarding way, you can call
612-440-1984.
And you can tell us about your favorite album of 2018.
Please do.
And, you know, give us a little bit to go on here, what it is, why you like it, so on and so forth. And if you do that, what do they win, Patrick?
In return, you will get a mixtape, side Jim, side Patrick, 75 minutes.
75 this year.
That's right. Yeah. Because, we cut down.
Because you ordered the tapes from like Estonia or something like that, right?
Yeah. It was actually, right. Yeah.
They're 75 minute cassettes. But anyway, we're going to make.
The exchange rate is fantastic.
Yes, yeah, right. So we're going to make the mixtapes with some of our favorite songs of the past year. Mm-hmm. And all you have to do is call in, tell us about your favorite album of the year. We'll put you on the show and then we'll send you the tape. That's
going to be great. Yeah, easy, man. The artwork will be fantastic. We've been working on it. Yeah, spray paint will be involved. It'll be fantastic.
That. Yep, get the workshop going.
That's right.
All right, it's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And we'll talk to you guys for the next couple years.
Thank you, guys.
All right, thanks, guys.
Peace out. I think someone on Facebook asked how much bourbon is too much bourbon.
Oh. Okay. So there's, it depends. It depends on the context. So okay. Are you asking because you want to give me bourbon or buy me bourbon? Then I would say there's no such thing as too much. Right. Bring it on.